Turn up the radio and sing along. It's time for another great song. This is the Great Song Podcast.
Season's greetings and welcome again to another episode of the Great Song Podcast. I'm Rob Alley.
I am JP Mosier.
And we're here breaking down the greatest songs in modern music history. We're going to tell you what makes them great, why we think they're awesome, and why you should too. JP, how you doing today, man?
Fantastic. Just ate a tasty little hamburger there. Sam's Sports Grill there in Hendersonville, Tennessee.
Shout out to Sam's Sports Grill.
So good. We each had a burger. I chose the kettle chips. Rob chose the French fries.
Absolutely. They were delicious.
If you get one side to go with your main course the rest of your life, like you get one... either baked potato, side salad, fries, or chips. And they're like, I'm sorry, we're getting away with all your popular sides.
I'm going fries.
You're going fries?
Yeah.
I go chips.
Really?
Chips. I like the crunch.
No, I'm going to go fries. I don't know. Chips are hit or miss.
What do you think Phil Collins would choose? Salad? Seems like a salad guy to you.
I don't know. Maybe a baked potato.
Maybe with no butter or sour cream, just like plain baked potato.
Maybe so. I'll have to ask him.
We'll ask him.
Phil? No, I'm just kidding.
He's not a special guest.
Oh, man. Wouldn't that be something? Well, we're going to do the next best thing. We're going to have Phil Collins here in spirit and in music because today's song is an all-time extravaganza of classic wonderfulness. That's right. We're talking about In the Air Tonight from the album Face Value. Let's waste no time. Let's hop right in to In the Air Tonight. Whew, I felt it. Did you feel it?
Oh, yes. Yes, I can feel it coming.
I felt it. I felt it coming last night in the air. It was just out there, you know?
Oh, yes. Actually, at Sam's, when we were eating our burger, song came on the radio.
It's true. We had a moment. We were talking about a Genesis album, about to leave the table and come here to record this podcast, and then this song came on playing overhead.
And we're like, it's a sign.
It was spooky.
It was weird.
If we believed in pagan spooky weirdness, we would have been creeped out by it.
There's something in the air tonight.
But instead, we were just like, oh, that's cool.
Neato. Let's go record it.
Yeah. So where to even start with this? I mean, this is a potentially, if you had a Mount Rushmore of like solo artist hits, this could be up there as definitely one of the most recognizable, beloved. It's up there with Africa, you know what I mean? It's up there with just about anything that is just universally loved. Nobody doesn't like this song, right? Everybody loves In the Air Tonight. It is from the album Face Value, released in 1981. Phil Collins...
Another 81 reference.
81. We are killing it in 1981 right now. Face Value, Phil Collins' first solo album as a solo artist. It charted at number 2 in the UK and number 19 on the Hot 100 Billboard chart in the United States.
You know what is number 2 behind?
I do. Why don't you tell us?
Oh, John Lennon, Woman.
John Lennon, Woman. Was that the first single released after his death?
It was posthumously.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think that was the first song. I read a quote from Phil Collins that just kind of almost kind of glibly said, like, he didn't, somebody had told him when they heard this song for the first time, they were like, that's going to be a top three hit. He played it on Top of the Pops. That's what it was. He played it on Top of the Pops, and the host of Top of the Pops, whoever that was, said, you know, that's going to be a top three hit. And the next week it shot up to number three. And then he was like, and then, you know, I'm not quoting here, but basically he was like, and then Dead John Lennon dropped a song and that was that,
yeah.
You know, like stupid John Lennon kept me from getting to number one, had to go die. So, yeah, Woman by John Lennon, held this one at bay at number two. This was Colin's first single, not only his first album, but his first single as a solo artist. He says that he offered it up to Genesis. Phil Collins was the drummer and then later the lead singer for the band Genesis. Originally, lead singer was Peter Gabriel. And after his departure, Phil moved from drum kit to lead vocals. And he said he offered it to, up to Genesis first and that the bandmates rejected it, saying it was too simple. Tony Banks of Genesis insists that Phil never played them the song. He said it didn't happen. But after Phil's release of this album and this song, Genesis did sort of shift their direction musically from being a kind of headier, progressive, harder to grab onto, you know, thing into more of a pop territory. And that's when they came out with albums like Invisible Touch and We Can't Dance, which are just pop masterpieces.
Yes.
You know, they have just a touch of progressive to them, but they're still very... attainable as a listener, you know, got some good pop sensibility.
Radio friendly.
There you go. This song was also given a bump in popularity by its use in the first season of the TV show Miami Vice and release subsequently of the soundtrack, which sold 4 million copies. The soundtrack to Miami Vice sold 4 million copies. So, I mean... That's not bad.
Yeah.
That's the kind of album you want to have a single on.
Good job, Don Johnson.
Yeah. I don't care if it's number 9 out of 10. You want to be on that album because you just sold 4 million copies. What was the guy's Jan Hammer? Is that the guy that did the Miami Vice theme song?
I
think that's right. Jan Hammer. Or it might be Jan Hammer. I don't know. But it's, you know, J-A-N. Maybe it's a girl. I don't know. I always assumed it was a guy, but that's probably because I'm a guy. anywho... Big talk about this song is, what's it about? That's always been the question with this song, and it's one of those that has a million different, you know, interpretations, especially, you know, in the internet age. People just start making up things online, and you know, rumor becomes fact.
Did he really see someone, witness someone drowning and not help?
Right. That's one of the most popular, is that there's a line in here about, you know... you know, I was there and I saw what you did, you know, saw it with my own two eyes, and the line about, if you saw me, if you told me you were drowning, I would not lend a hand, and all this stuff. And so the rumor became, the urban legend became, that Phil Collins had been witness to a drowning incident in which he saw someone drowning, and he was too far away to help, but that he had seen somebody nearby
that
who could have
helped
and they refused, and that this song is his, like... You know.
He blatantly says that's false.
Yeah.
He adamantly is opposed to that.
Yes. And he insists, he says this song is about the grief that he felt after divorcing his first wife, Andrea Bertarelli, I believe is how you pronounce it, in 1980. In a 2016 interview, Collins said of the song's lyrics, and this is amazing. I'm always astonished when I hear an artist say this. He said, I wrote the lyrics spontaneously. I'm not quite sure what the song is about, but there's a lot of anger, a lot of despair, and a lot of frustration. He said, I had to start writing some of this music that was inside me. He improvised the lyrics during a songwriting session in the studio. He said, I was just fooling around. I got these chords that I liked, so I turned the mic on and started singing. The lyrics you hear are what I wrote spontaneously. That frightens me a bit, but I'm quite proud of the fact that I sang 99.9% of those lyrics spontaneously. That's really something, because, I mean, they're good. They're solid. They're
and
very
sustained, and it kind of fits. You know?
Yeah, and they're very sort of evocative emotionally. You know what I mean? They kind of put you in a place. And not to mention these chords, and we've talked before about pedal tones. And this song is another big pedal tone song where, if you think of it like an organ that has pedals that stick out, you can hit a tone on the organ just with the pedals. And let's say you're in the key of, oh, I don't know, D minor perhaps, which happens to be the key of this song. And you hold that D with on the pedals with your foot, and then you just start moving chords around it with your right hand or both your hands if you're on an organ. You can move chords around that ordinarily wouldn't go, like, basically... you can do this with your left hand on a keyboard or on a pedal, where you keep the D on bottom, and in this case, your chords are moving D minor, C, B flat, C over that D chord, and it gives it just sort of a different emotion. It adds some, I don't know if intensity is the right word, but it definitely adds some tension.
Tension, that's a good
tension
one.
Is that's probably good. The right word. And so to hear those chords just moving over that single pedal tone just gives it a certain feel that really that's about the only way to get it. It's a very unique feel to
it's
have
like
that
a hum
pedal
in
tone.
Your ear. It's like somebody's humming in your ear.
Yeah.
And you can't, it's just, you just want to break, change, just to change.
Yeah.
You just want to change.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you like subconsciously beg for that resolution.
Yeah.
And most of the time you get it. And actually this song really... never does resolve from a pedal tone. There's literally a pedal tone D under this entire song. And so...
the drum part changes, which gives you some thickness.
Yes.
Well, not the part. It's still a loop, but...
yes. And I guess once the drums and bass come in, I guess the bass does move with the chords as opposed to being pedal tone. I was wrong about that. So that does give a little
but
bit of relief.
But the pad underneath stays.
But the, yeah. So, and we'll get to the amazing drum fill and drum sound and all that classic stuff in just a moment. Something I learned in research that I did not know about this song: the original single release for radio had added toms before the main drums kick in. Did you know this?
No.
Phil was playing it for somebody. They listened to it. Now, I don't know if it was a producer or an executive with the record label, but he was playing it for them, and they're like, "Where are the drums?" And he's like, "They're coming. Just wait for it." And he's like, "Okay, you know they're coming, but the kids listening on the radio don't know they're coming, and they're not going to wait 3 minutes to hear them." So they went in the studio and added some tom work before the big drum kick in. So you've got the loop that's there from the very beginning. But they added it from the second verse on, just some like, let me play you a little clip and you can hear it for yourself. I didn't even believe it until I heard it. So yeah, we've got some random toms inserted there, and they're actually inserted from the beginning upon second listen. They're there from the very beginning of the single version of the song, which is, it's not bad, but it's
just different.
Yeah, like we're used to having heard it now that, you know, the...
so empty.
Yeah, and it's great because then when the drums kick in, it's like, yeah!
Thank you! Where have you been the past 3 minutes?
Yeah, like... so I don't think it ruins it by any means to have those in there. It's very tastefully done. It's very Phil Collins-y.
Yeah.
It reminds me even a little bit of the Genesis song, No Son of Mine, mm-hmm. where there's some random, there's some stuff in there early. It's a quiet song, but it's got some stuff in there on 2 and 4 just to keep it moving along. Yep. Same kind of concept. So the original single release had those added toms before that kicks in. It's been featured in tons of movies, TV shows. Like
it's
I
in
said,
Risky Business.
Was it really?
It's in the train scene. It's pretty. I was like, oh, neat. And I started watching it. I was like, oh, I probably shouldn't. It's a little edgy. But then the one that Risky Business is most known for is Old Time Rock and Roll.
Yeah.
That's the big Tom Cruise moment. Or his
breakout.
It's in there, too. This
interesting. And like I said, it was on Miami Vice. Phil Collins actually had a an acting role in Miami Vice at one point. It wasn't the same episode that featured his song, but it was later. Might have even been in the second season, I think, of Miami Vice. But he basically played a villain. He was the bad guy for that episode. So very cool. He's done a few little smaller acting, you know, things. Is this your favorite Phil Collins
song? Not at all.
Not
at all.
Wow.
I'm going to say I have two that are above it.
Okay.
Which my favorite Phil Collins song is definitely Something Happened on the Way to Heaven.
Okay.
That's my number one.
Yeah.
Closely followed by Both Sides of the Story.
Okay.
So this this hits number three for me.
All right.
So.
Wow. Something happened on the way to heaven.
So sorry if I deflated your Rushmore there. That's just my personal favorite is this one. This is probably one of my least favorite albums.
Of his.
In terms of the albums. Yeah. And I'll talk more about that later when we do an album section. But.
Yeah. Wow. I used to play. There was a little restaurant in my hometown that had a jukebox, and I would play Something Happened on the Way to Heaven every time I went in there. It was that, and the B side was an instrumental called, I think it was The Robbery, or something like that. I love it. Something Happened on the Way to Heaven has a great drum fill again. And it's just two snare hits, two snare flams, but ba ba da ba ba.
Love it. Yeah, it's good. Right with the horn section. That's a good video. Have you seen the video with the dog?
No, I have not.
Dog runs around. They're recording. They're playing. And there's this dog that runs around and pees on stuff. And it's just, it's really funny. It's it's good. Good video. Good song. Good video. But we are talking about In the Air tonight. So
yes.
Back on that.
Yes. Yes, we are. It's my favorite thing that I saw that it had been used as far as a movie or TV show advertising. It was used in 1986. When the brewer Anheuser-Busch, Busch Beer, adopted it for an ad campaign promoting their beer Michelob, along with other night-related songs by some of Phil Collins' peers. They played Don't You Know What the Night Can Do by Steve Winwood and After Midnight by Eric Clapton.
Oh,
so they used
cool.
all these night songs.
And they're buddies, too. All those guys are buddies.
Yeah.
So that's neat.
Old British, I guess 60s, 70s era British rockers, you know, all advertising Michelob beer. Because why not at night? It's been sampled by tons of artists, everybody from Tupac to Shaquille O'Neal.
What?
That's right. Shaq.
Fushnickens?
Fushnickens. Not that song, but hang on. Let me give you a quick listen. This is Shaquille O'Neal, Edge of Night, featuring Bobby Brown from 1996.
My prerogative?
Yep.
As I look up in the sky, my mind starts tripping, a tear drops, my eye drops, my eye.
In the streets of the ghetto, lurking through trouble with brothers and rebels who thought the night was the mine. Shack the dime that shines in the nighttime, my way in and stand in New Jersey. Stay to mind, cause I'm the player of all times. But I'm never content and bit the rules my way. Flowing when I say goals are the highway. The 7-foot killer with more sales than Thriller. If I'm not in my mansion, you can find me in the villa. On the islands of St. Thomas, Bahamas or on the Aruba. Jet ski or scuba diving, no longer striving. Cause I'm in position to buy your whole city. Cashmere twism joints, call me Chef Kitty, can you feel me?
I can feel it calling in the air.
Oh, Lord.
I'm so sorry, everyone.
Oh, Lord.
7-foot killer with more sales than Thriller? Is that what that line
That's
is?
What he said.
Hey, I wonder if that was the backing track to Shaq Fu. Did you ever see that game?
Oh, yeah. They're remaking it. They remade it for the Nintendo Switch.
I thought it was only for Sega.
I just assumed that it was an April Fool's joke because I think I saw it on like April 2nd or something like that. But no, apparently it's real. They're real remaking Shaq Fu, the worst fighting game in history.
Yeah.
Trying to make something of it. I don't know.
Speaking of fighters, Mike Tyson does a killer drum feel to this in The Hangover.
I've heard that. I've never seen The Hangover, but I heard that he has a...
One of my grandmother's favorite movies. She loved The Hangover. We'd come over and she'd be like, quiet, I'm watching The Hangover.
Oh my gosh.
The same grandma that watched TBN and all the Hallmark and Lifetime movies loved The Hangover for some reason.
That's hilarious. This is among, if not the most well-known... drum fills
in
history.
Something. Absolutely.
I mean, there are a few, but I guess maybe we should play it for you and then we'll talk about it. So this is like 3 minutes into the song, and it's just been that little...
The only drums have been the Roland CR78 drum machine, yep. which is pretty simple beat, just carried it up to where we're about to bring us in.
Yes, and it was a pre-made disco, I think it was called the Disco 2 loop from that drum machine, and he had gone in and tweaked the programming a little bit, but it was pretty much just a preset disco loop slowed down, and he just got these Prophet synthesizer,
Prophet 5 synthesizer,
and just got, you know, churned out this classic track. So we've got, you know, just minutes of tension building. It's this dark lyric, dark feeling song. You know, everything is so heavy, and then he kicks in with this brilliance. I mean, the grooves do not get nastier than that.
And if you've never seen Rob air drum it into air bass it, oh my goodness, it's amazing.
Whew, so good. I had to do the combo.
He had to become John Giblin bass player.
Why don't we talk about him? Let's take a second and meet the band.
Let's meet the band.
Hey, let's meet the band. It's time to meet the band. Hey, mama, let's meet the band. Let's all.
Let's meet the band of the Phil Collins band off of Face Value, off of this track, namely. Phil Collins on Roland CR78 drum machine, the aforementioned drum machine, vocals, drums, Prophet 5 synthesizer, Rhodes piano, and Roland VP330 vocoder.
By the way, if you really want to hear some of this stuff, listen to the remastered version that came out in 2016, 2015. It's got some, I guess it's got some more compression in there that's bringing up some of the elements.
A lot of the stuff in the mix comes up that I'd never heard till he just played the remix.
There's a little before the guitar comes in with that big wail at the beginning, it's doing a little trill that's like way down in the mix, and you can hear the electric piano in there
the
at
Rhodes
times.
Hitting little things.
Yeah, a lot before, like there's a, you know, you can hear it at the end going bam, bam, bam in the, under the groove, but there's some little very, very subtle notes in there before. So check out the remastered version versus the original version. See which one you like better. Let us know. Send us a tweet at Great Song Pod and let us know which version you like better.
On bass, John Giblin, who we just mentioned, he actually co-wrote Can't Hurry Love with him on that. Also played with Annie Lennox, Alan Parsons Project, Manfred Mann's Rare Earth Band, and this is the coolest thing ever that I found about him. He played bass with Paul McCartney on McCartney Live at Albert Hall.
Huh.
So how would it be to be the bass player when McCartney doesn't play bass?
Yeah.
Like, that's a compliment there.
Yeah, that's
like,
very
you're
cool.
going to play bass with me at Albert Hall.
That's awesome.
I thought that was pretty cool. So, John Giblin on bass. On guitar, I hope I pronounced his last name right because it's got a lot of weird. It's Daryl Sturmer. It's Sturmer. Daryl Sturmer. He played guitar as of 1977. He replaced Steve Hackett on all the Genesis live shows. I'm going to do the best I can to refrain on any Genesis facts because I know we're going to talk about them in a future podcast. I'm going to try to save Genesis stuff for another day. But he's got a speaking part on One More Night. And apparently he's mentioned by name on the video to Don't Lose My Number. Love that song. And I watched that video probably 3 or 4 times. And that's 4 minutes and 40 seconds of video that I watched 3 or 4 times, and I cannot find where this reference is.
Interesting.
But it's mentioned multiple times.
Is there a different, like, long-form version of the
video?
I don't
know. I've watched this video. I kept watching, and just to watch a video, the same music video over and over, can get kind of repetitive, and I never saw it.
Interesting.
He also wrote I Don't Want to Know, which is on the No Jacket Required Phil Collins album. Gear-wise, he is most known for playing the Torino Red Eric Clapton Strat. So if you see even the video that we talked about earlier with Something Happened on the Way to Heaven, he's playing that Strat. And most of the live shows and live video clips I've seen, he plays a red Strat all the way through. So Daryl on guitar. All right, the next person I want to talk about with Meet the Band is the violin player, and I want to play a game. I don't know if I can pull this off. I'm going to try. So his name is L. Shankar. He plays violin. He's from Sri Lanka, and everything I found about him talks a lot about his family. He's a family guy. So I'm going to flash the names of his family member under Rob's face.
Oh, no.
And he's going to have to remember. I'm just going to give him like 1 second to see the name.
Oh, okay.
And you're going to have to just take a quick look. I wrote them out.
Okay.
And there's going to be four family members, and we're going to see how many of the four he can get. We're going to do brother, father, mother, or two brothers, a father, and a mother. So here we go. I'm going to pause it. Here you go. I'm going to walk over and flash these in front of you, and then we'll go live.
Okay.
So we're sharing a mic over here. I'm awfully close, and I'm going to flash this in front of him from 1 second and then hide it. You just guys have to trust me that I'm showing it to him quickly. And go.
Okay. El Sublanium.
Close. El Sublanium.
Oh.
Good job. That's the that's one of the brothers. Sorry. And brother number two. Here we go.
El Vaidyanathan.
El Vaidyanathan.
Oh.
Pretty close. And okay, here we go with father.
V. Lakshakamarian.
V. Lakshamarian.
Oh, I was so
close.
Wow.
Over three.
I'm so. Y'all think I'm just being racist and trying to make this stuff up.
It's really hard. These vowels and stuff are really tough.
Okay.
And round four. Here we go with the mother.
Okay. Ooh, L. C. Thanaki.
E. L. C. Thalakashami.
Thalakashami.
We were so close. Okay, I'm going back to my mic. Pause break.
All right. I feel like I was reading shampoo ingredients. No offense to all the Elf Seath the Lack of Shammies out there listening.
So yeah, that
but your name sounds like a shampoo ingredient.
There's a lot of fun. There's a lot of vowels and consonants. L. Shankar, big family guy, talks a lot about his family in all the interviews. So I thought that was nice to give him the shout out that his family so richly deserves.
I'm not sure if he heard it that he would appreciate it as much as you think.
I don't know if he liked it that we botched his family's names. We were really trying to give honor to your family.
Yeah.
He wrote the score for The Last Temptation of Christ, starring William Dafoe.
Okay.
Never seen it. It's pretty sacrilegious. No. So I like William Dafoe. But I've never seen this film.
He scares me.
So? He's always the villain. His face.
It's the face.
It's his face.
I'm not gonna lie.
It's his face. Okay. He also played with Frank Zappa, Yoko Ono, and Peter Gabriel. So that's a pretty short Meet the Band section because that's all there is.
Yeah.
Phil does mainly everything. Okay, back to albums. Is this your favorite Phil Collins album? Do you know what's on each album or what are some?
I've got my, most of the time, if I go Phil Collins, I'm going the hits album, so that's just been my go-to for a long time. I'm hit or miss with the other albums, but I do enjoy this album a lot. Yes.
My two favorite albums, I probably listen to But Seriously most because that's got Wish It Would Rain Down, Another Day in Paradise, Colors, and Something Happens on the Way to Heaven.
Yeah.
That's now, but growing up, the one I listened to the most was No Jacket Required.
No Jacket, yeah.
Because it had Sussudio. One More Night, Don't Lose My Number, and Take Me Home. And I love Take Me Home.
That's a great
feel. Good. There's another good loop.
And some amazing background vocals on that one. You ever done any research on that one? Like Sting and a ton of people sang backgrounds on that one. That big sort of chorus at the end. Take me home. Yeah, there's tons of people on that. It's very cool.
He actually live plays congas on that. That's his.
Oh, really?
He comes out. I've seen him open, not live in person, but I've seen him on concert videos and DVDs. He is actually number one on my bucket list to see.
Yeah.
He's the one that I haven't seen that I want to see live. So, but he plays congas for Take Me Home. He brings out, that's how he starts a lot of his shows. Least favorite album, I would go Dance Into the Light.
Really?
Uh-huh. I'm not a fan of that, and I'm going to have a theory on that. I'm going to show you this. So let's look at the albums of the ones that I like. I'm just going to hold up the vinyls.
I think I know where you're
going.
Go ahead. Yes,
so
I think
so. We'll show face value, even though that's not in my top. But Seriously, Both Sides.
Yep.
Okay, now let's look at Dance Into the Light.
Yep.
Well, other than the fact that the McKay sticker is covering it. And the others, it's all up in his face.
It's all just the face shots.
It's all the face shots.
Yep.
And I don't know if you may talk more about this, but on the Face Value album, do you know why he did the shots like that? Is he said he wanted the listener to get inside his head, which I thought was really neat. So if you look at the album cover, it's got the front of his face on the back and the back of his head.
That's right.
On the back. So the music inside is actually in his head.
That's awesome. And if you've never seen it, just think about the cover to Adele 25. And replace her face with Phil Collins. And that's it. That's literally it. You can you can face swap them on like a Snapchat filter, and they both still look the same, like the same album.
Yeah, that's pretty. And he actually hand wrote all the liner notes on here.
Oh, really?
And
I never knew
this
that.
This is his handwriting.
Oh, I love his handwriting.
His handwriting on the back, his handwriting on the inside. He wrote everything.
Oh, wow.
Inside it. So I think that's pretty creative.
Oh, I love that.
I'll tell you one thing that I don't like on it that I thought I would. Eric Clapton plays on two tracks on this. I don't know if you know this. He plays on track 4, which is The Roof is Leaking. Okay. He plays dobro on it.
Okay.
And he also plays guitar on 11, If Leaving Me Is Easy. And this is the biggest waste of Eric Clapton that I've ever heard.
Yeah.
There's no solos. There's no... It's like, if you're going to have Clapton on there, shine like, with Clapton.
Yeah, have him do something Clapton-y.
So that leads me to my next question for you. Can you think of anything where Clapton is a guest spot on a track that is magnificent? And like, where he's not, it's not a Clapton album. It's a somebody featuring Clapton.
Didn't he guest on I Wish It Would Rain Down?
He did, yes. Yeah. And that was going to be that's how he justified using Clapton. That's the way you use Eric Clapton. Play
absolutely
a little of that. You can play the intro, you can play the solo, anything. This is how you use Eric Clapton on a song.
That's
how you use Eric Clapton in a song. You don't have him playing dobro, sitting in the back doing something.
That's right.
You put him out front and you say, play 5 notes and bend them how you want and then get creative. Play them in different octaves and it's money.
If you're going to pay for Clapton.
You pay. Like, that's right. If you're gonna, that's good.
Which makes me feel like, honestly, probably they're just close.
They're just big
friends.
Buddies. They help each other
out.
So
he was like, hey, you know, so like it doesn't have to be.
You want to come
just
sit in and play some chords?
Exactly.
On a song.
Just play, you know, whatever.
That's how you use it. And so that led me to my next question is other thing. I think you nailed that one. I'll give you my two that I could think of.
Okay.
I intentionally did not Google this or look up like songs where Eric Clapton guest spots. And I just tried to remember just off the top of my head, like, man, I really liked what Clapton did on this. Richie Sambora had an album called Stranger in This Town that I love, and he does a song called Mr. Bluesman with Clapton that obviously a song called Mr. Bluesman featuring Clapton is going to be good.
Solid.
So that's awesome. And Candy Mountain Run, Bruce Hornsby song?
Yeah.
Clapton plays on that.
I would have gone, there's a couple of, he was on several songs on the that album, which is Escaping, Halcyon Days is the name of that album. By Bruce Hornsby. He plays on Space is the Place, which is cool. He's got a little solo work in there. And one other that is it's getting
not
getting
Hooray
past
for Tom.
Me. Yes, not Hooray for Tom. Some good stuff on that one. Not as good as I Wish It Would Rain Down.
No,
that's
no, no,
the
just,
best.
Yeah, it's just it's usage, but enough.
Yeah.
And didn't he, I might be wrong on this. I probably should have looked it up. Didn't he play on It's Probably Me, the Sting song? Did he help write that or help be a part of that?
I should have
looked it
say.
Up. I don't know why I thought he did. I'd heard that. Maybe I'm wrong.
Huh.
But I thought he did on that. So Clapton guest spots.
Yeah. Okay. Listen, Eric Clapton, if you're out there listening, you can come.
You can play rhythm guitar.
Guest. Yeah. I don't care what you want to play on it. Just come play on anything that you want. If you don't want to just sit and play while we do a podcast.
If you want to do Spoons, come on over. Play the Spoons.
Come on.
Featuring Eric Clapton on Spoons.
You can use my guitar. You don't have to bring anything. You
just
know, we'll supply whatever you want. You know, I hope you like Rogue. But I hope you like Rogue and Mitchell.
That's awesome.
That's what we got.
We got a K sitting over there, too, if you're lucky, for the acoustic stuff. That's awesome. Phil Collins facts?
Yeah.
Jump on some of those?
Absolutely.
Inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2010. But as a member of Genesis.
Oh.
And I'm purposely going to stay off Genesis facts, like I mentioned.
Is he in there solo as well? Just with Genesis so far?
He's just in there with Genesis.
Wow.
Which leads me to the next thing. Do you know the three people who've sold 100 million albums as a solo artist and as a group? This is a cool list.
Okay.
So there's three. He's one of them.
I'm going to say Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson. Good job.
Paul McCartney.
Paul McCartney, that's it. And Phil Collins.
That's
the it.
Wow.
I tried to do the list, and I put Sting in there. I thought Sting would have made it.
Oh, yeah.
And Sting is not.
Huh.
So Collins has done 100 million albums as a group. And that's a lot of freaking albums.
My gosh.
Yeah, 100 million by himself and 100 million with Genesis.
Holy cow.
He taught himself to play music and has his own music notation. Like, he doesn't read music. He doesn't understand. Like, he's like, I'm going to play this.
He writes it his own way.
Yeah, this is what, this is a, this chord
like,
to me.
Like when Phoebe was learning guitar on Friends.
Anger, so here's, old lady.
Here's Bear Claw. Yeah,
Bear Claw. same thing.
Wow. You know, who else? Yanni. Yanni doesn't read
music. Shut up. Live
Yanni,
at the Acropolis.
Yanni wrote his, right, came up with his own notation system.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny?
That's awesome. I actually discovered Yanni on an NBA Superstars video that
of
I had.
Of course. Who did?
He did a Looking Glass on there. And I was like, how about Yanni?
Yeah.
Phil Collins also in the movie Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Really?
And he's an extra in the Beatles Hard Day's Night.
Wow.
How about that? So a little movie credits there for,
wow,
for old Phil. The way he got into Genesis, he auditioned at Peter Gabriel's house for the drummer to play drums, and everybody went and they just lined up and went one right after the other. And he's like, I'd like to go last. And he memorized what everyone did just by watching them and took the parts he liked of all theirs and added his own thing.
Slick.
Smart. Out.
Slick guy. Outplayed. He really is one of the most tasteful drummers I have ever heard.
Not super flashy.
No. But he just knows where to put things, and he knows when not to do things. Like, you'll hear him on some tracks he'll hit a kick drum every 3 bars. Like, instead of, like, where you would go, normally you'd have like a, right? He'll get, or make you wait even longer, you know what I'm saying? But, and it really makes the song, it just works. He, like, is very thoughtful about every little thing. I was talking to you when we were listening to I Wish It Would Rain Down. He's got just a little simple snare hit that sets off the chorus. Now I, kaboom! It's just, it sets it off just the right way. Like, it's just, it's like if you have a, you know, if you're eating a soup or something and there's just the right spice in there that hits you just a little bit, just the right way. You know what I mean? It doesn't overload anything. It's not too much. It's just so nice.
Good.
But it makes you really appreciate the soup. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's got that little hint of saffron or whatever in it.
He's also deaf in his left ear.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Yeah. Proficient in bagpipes. Of course.
Yeah, of course.
Why not?
I mean,
another movie reference.
Who isn't?
He's in the movie Hook. As a Scotland Yard detective.
Yes,
love that movie, and I cannot
picture
him.
I can.
When you said it,
I saw it. Yeah. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. I've got one. I actually have a couple that I'm not stepping on your toes, I don't think.
No,
Okay. Phil Collins played this song at Live Aid.
Sure. Okay.
In 1985, and he was able to take a Concorde jet, fastest jet in the world, and play the song on stage in both London and Philadelphia on the same day.
Yes.
They were holding Live Aid in both locations and flew from one to the other. And because of time zone differences and whatnot, he performed at both on the same day.
Did you hear who all he played with on each set?
No, I heard something about Pete Townsend making a joke.
In the morning, he played with Sting and Branford Marsalis.
Okay.
And then after that, he played with Clapton and Led Zeppelin.
Goo!
So he said he hated the Led Zeppelin set and wished he could have walked out the stage. But he stuck it out because he didn't want to be the guy that walked off the stage at Live Aid.
Wow.
But he said it was awful. Worst experience he's ever had.
No kidding.
He said it was just bad.
Wow.
So, yeah, but how's that for playing with those people in different
settings?
Not
a bad day.
Yeah, I know, right? In different parts of the world.
Oh, that's so funny. You got other random facts? I've got a couple more, but I can save them or we can go.
Rock it. I've got two more lists, so you go with some stuff.
Other random fact. In 2007, after this song was featured in a TV advertisement for Cadbury's Dairy Milk in England, featuring a drumming gorilla playing along to this song. The song again hit the charts and went to number 14. And the Cadbury's television advertisement was one of the best received commercials in the UK in recent times. And it succeeded in helping to boost sales of dairy milk by an increase of 9% in a year.
9%?
9%. Just milk sales shot up because
of
this song.
How about that?
Like,
you think Phil Collins drinks milk? You think he's a milk drinker?
I don't know. You know, some people won't allow their stuff to be used in products they don't use. And other people are like, are you paying? Fine, go for it.
Do you drink milk? Would you just sit and drink milk?
No, almost never.
Me neither.
Only in cereal.
Cereal?
Yeah, but like to just drink a glass of milk? Nah, keep it.
Do you drink the milk after the cereal is gone, like the sugary milk leftovers? Like if you have Cocoa Pebbles or Krispies, do you drink the chocolate milk remains?
It depends. No, and I'll tell you why. I was trying to postulate an answer, and I couldn't figure out why it wasn't making sense, but it's because I don't leave any milk. I keep adding cereal
to finish
until
the
milk is gone.
I'm the same way. Yeah. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So similar.
Yeah.
What about that?
How about this one? In the video game Grand Theft Auto Vice City Stories.
Okay.
There are several levels. That's set in Miami in the 80s. So it's got a Miami Vice vibe to the whole game. Okay. There are several levels surrounding a subplot of a Phil Collins concert coming to Vice City. The missions all entail protect. This is from Wikipedia, by the way. The missions all entail protecting Phil Collins from a gang that his manager owes money to. And in the final mission of the game, entitled In the Air Tonight, you must stay on the catwalk of the stage while Phil performs the song and stop gang members from killing him. During the song, yes. After you beat the mission, you can return to the stadium, purchase a ticket to the concert, and watch an animated video of Phil Collins performing this song on stage.
Holy cow.
In Grand Theft Auto.
So he plays himself in a video game.
Yeah.
As Phil Collins as Phil Collins.
Phil Collins as himself.
That's cool.
That's when you know you've made it.
That's right.
When you play yourself
in a video game.
In a video game.
And doing what you do.
Like, right. Yeah, not even as like, you know, I'm playing a detective. No, yeah. I'm on stage performing greatest hit.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. He has had 6 number one hits, and this is not one of them. Did you know that?
I knew it wasn't one of them, but I just hadn't thought about it.
Do you know how many of
them? Think
how many of the 6 you can get. There's 6.
Are they all, they're legit solo
they're
hits?
They're legit
not Genesis.
Solo hits. This is Phil Collins solo hits that went to number one.
Is Sussudio one?
Sussudio is one. That's the 7th one. That's number 7.
Okay.
I've just got them in order.
Both Sides of the Story?
Both Sides of the Story is not.
Another Day in Paradise.
Another Day in Paradise was his 5th one.
Okay.
Number 5.
All right, hang on. I'm just trying to go through the...
Through the hits album?
Yeah, through the hits album. How about it? Sure, none of the Motown stuff, right? Not like Can't Hurry Love.
No.
True Colors, no.
Nope. I'll say them and you'll start knowing them.
Go.
Groovy Kind of Love was his first one.
Really?
That was his first number one hit.
Oh, what about how can I just let you
Against
walk away?
Odds.
Against All Odds.
Yep.
There we
that
go.
That was his second one. That was number 2.
Underrated movie scene. What is it? Forces of Nature with
Sandra Bullock and Ben Affleck.
And somebody's in it, and I can't think of the actor who does this. I want to say it's Bradley Cooper, but this was way before his time. But somebody that reminds me of Bradley Cooper for some reason, like Sean William Scott, but not him either. Anyway, they're in the movie, and they're trying to get Sandra Bullock, and they start singing that to her as she walks away, and they just singing it so badly, and she just has this pained look on her face, like, oh, you poor thing.
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
That's cool. So we've got 3 left, 3, 4, and 6. Separate Lives. Which I
really
would have never thought that hit number one, but it did.
What about Easy Lover?
Nope, but I love that one. Another slow one, and then kind of a mid-tempo.
Did I already guess Another Day in Paradise?
You did.
Mm.
One More Night was number 4.
Okay, sure.
And the last one, think Card Game, but not really Card Game.
Card Game.
I was just trying to get you away. Two Hearts.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So that's his 7 number one hits.
That was kind of unexpected.
Yeah. And In the Air Tonight didn't. And
it was number 19. It wasn't even that close.
It's about timing, I guess. You know, I guess
true.
Is the way you look at it.
He got on a roll.
Against the competition you're going against at that time.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Could be. This also has, you know, this is maybe, we mentioned one of the greatest known, at least, you know, technically. It's not, but one of the greatest, most well-known drum fills of all time. And I started to think, you know, about some of the other drum fills that you can recognize a song instantly
when you hear the fill
by a drum fill.
Okay.
Do you have any of those that just immediately pop to mind? I have a few that I wrote down.
Play some and maybe some of mine will start hitting.
Okay. So, and there's kind of you have to kind of make a distinction between drum fills and like drum grooves, but like a drum groove that starts a song
that
stays solo.
Okay.
Right. So like, take Rock and Roll by Led Zeppelin.
Okay.
Right? You hear that. You know what I mean? You know instantly that's Rock and Roll. How about this one? How about we'll play a little. I'll play you a little clip and you tell me what song it is.
Oh, man.
Yep. Good call. Good call. You know Ringo when you hear him.
Yeah.
How about this one? Yep.
Yeah.
Are You Gonna Be My Girl by Jet?
Jet.
Yep. Okay. Let's see. Hang on. I got a couple others. This one has two acceptable answers.
Janie's Crying?
Yes. That is Janie's Crying by Van Halen.
Van Halen?
But most of the listeners probably know. Okay, here's the full fill. Okay, but most of our listeners probably only know
Funky Comedina, or the other one.
It's actually the other one. It's it's Wild
Thing.
Brum dum dum dum, where it cuts off the last two notes. Yeah, brum dum dum dum. So to the point that the first time I ever heard the Van Halen version that's a sample from, it freaked me out. I was like, what is that, and why does it have two extra notes in it? You know what I mean? So weird. I was like, where's the downbeat supposed to be? Yeah, okay. How about... You don't know this? Come on.
Oh, it's a... I can play it. I'm playing it.
The hand motions JP's doing right now. Yeah. Come on now.
I'm playing the guitar. Why am I drawing a blank?
That would be Van Halen's Hot for Teacher. Oh,
yeah,
man.
I was playing the speedy finger tap part and had a brain lock. I knew it was.
Oh
yeah.
Goodness, the histrionics JP was going through.
Oh my
just
goodness,
now.
That was weird. Sorry everybody, I disappointed all of us.
Those things were like, you just know what it is.
Yeah, like, it's like somebody plays Amazing Grace, and you're like, man. I know this one.
I know I've heard it. Hang on, I got it. Oh man, yeah, gotta love a you know you've written an iconic drum fill when people. Just know it. You know what I mean? There's another one in like Jack and Diane, you know, Kenny Aronoff that in the middle of Jack and Diane.
Wait a minute. That's not the drum.
Okay. Speaking of the drums, because one of the great things about Phil Collins is his drum sounds, right? Like not only is he a great player, but his drums always sound amazing. And this song became kind of a pattern for the kind of drum sounds that you heard throughout the rest of the 80s and even into the early 90s. And it's because of a technique known as gated reverb on the drums. And it kind of happened by accident. Phil was recording drums for Peter Gabriel's Intruder. And he started playing while there was a... On the mixing console, they're using an SSL mixing console, and it had a there's a thing called a talkback mic that the producers, the engineers, will use. They hit a button on the console, and it allows them to talk into the booth, into the ears of the performers, so that they can hear through the glass and through all the soundproofing. Well, there was a reverse talkback mic that was used on the SSL, so that the performers could talk back into the booth and you could do it from a distance away. You didn't have to be right up into it. And so he started playing while this reverse talkback mic was on, and the producer, who was Hugh Padgham, loved the sound. And they messed with it and used it on Intruder, and they rewired the console that night to be able to do it on purpose. Like they were like, okay, we want to be able to do this. So they rewired it they could use it to their advantage and be able to actually do it. They added some compression and, which brings, it makes the dynamic range reasonable. It brings up some of the lower volume sounds and squelches some of the higher volume sounds and kind of puts them together. So it gives you a thicker sound as far as drums.
Kind of like one of those t-shirt bags that you put under your bed. It compresses it all together. Like those big t-shirt bags.
Kind of so, yes.
So that you cram it all together
okay.
in one
like
little
the
tight
vacuum
space.
Sealed
yeah.
things. Okay, yes, a little bit, but with sound, yes. and then they added some gated microphones, which a gate, it only lets sound over certain volume thresholds through. And then if it's, if you set a gate to minus 20 decibels, then only sounds that are louder than negative 20 decibels get through the gate. And once the decay of the sound goes between that, then the gate closes at whatever, at, you know, you can make it fast or slow. And so that became the sound of gated reverb on drums. So that if you listen to, especially the snare, you can really hear it on the snare, where instead of just a pop, you get kind of a pow, pow, pow. And that is, that's how that sound became a thing. And it became the sound for drums in the 80s. And honestly, has made a big comeback now. You're hearing a lot of reverb on drums and toms again in a lot of pop and modern music. But it kind of happened by happy accident. And this track is the, well, actually, I guess it would be Peter Gabriel's Intruder that sort of became the whatever. But this was the, like, the coming out party for that sound, because this groove at the end is so relentless. Mm-hmm. And the drums and bass are grooving so hard, mm-hmm. the absolute most they're grooving. So yeah, that's a little bit about gated reverb.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Yeah. That was good.
Now you know.
Yeah, now the more you know. On the drummer topic, Phil Collins is the third wealthiest drummer. We've done wealthiest bass players in the past. So,
living?
Let me see here if they're all living. I think the majority are. I've got the top. I know the top nine or so. Let's just try to get the top five.
Okay.
And then I'll throw in some others. So okay. Let's start. We know Collins is number three.
Number three of the top five. $250
million is what he's worth.
Okay.
$250 million.
Okay.
Okay. Number one. What do you think number one is?
Neil Peart?
Neil Peart is not on the list.
Wow. Man, you would think.
Yeah, okay. As a drummer, I would have thought so too.
Yeah.
I think bigger picture.
Is Ringo?
Ringo is number one.
Okay.
$300 million is what Ringo's worth.
Of course.
Number two makes me want to vomit. I don't like this guy. There's a clue for you. You know, I don't like him. Played
who
with.
Are we talking about?
Dave Grohl.
Really?
Yes.
Not a fan?
Not a fan at all. Don't like the Foo Fighters. Can't stand Nirvana.
Okay.
There you go. Number two. Sorry, Dave.
Wow.
I know you're a big supporter of the podcast. My apologies.
So
there's number two. Number
Ringo.
Ringo Grohl Collins. Number four we've talked about on a podcast prior.
Is it Jeff Porcaro? Well, no.
We referenced him on we referenced Phil Collins on his podcast, Singing Drummers. Is he more of a singer?
Oh, wow. Don Henley.
Henley.
That makes sense.
Number four, $200 million is what Don Henley's worth.
Okay.
Number five, we would probably have to send him a fax for him to know how to get in touch with us.
Lars Ulrich.
Lars Ulrich. Oh. Lars, thanks for listening.
That's a great callback.
Yeah.
If you haven't listened to, I don't even remember what episode that was, but there was a great Lars Ulrich callback from season one. That's good. Good job.
I'll throw out the others.
Yeah, round
really
out
quick.
The others.
Number six, Larry Mullen of U2.
Okay, sure.
Number seven, Roger Taylor of Queen, not Roger Taylor of Duran Duran. Apparently the drummer, same name.
Didn't know that.
Drummer for Duran Duran, same name as the guy for Queen. Number eight, Joey Kramer. Aerosmith. Number nine, Chad Smith. And for some reason, yep. I did not write down number 10. Well, so there's the top nine.
Maybe it wasn't important.
So good job, Phil, coming in hard at number three.
Maybe no other drummers are rich.
That's like,
there are no other
and then
wealthy
it drops
drummers.
Down yeah. From there, too.
Then it's like guys who work at Guitar Center and gig on the weekends.
Chad Cochran, yeah. Number 10.
Shout out to Chad Cochran if you're listening.
Chad Cochran, big fan.
Although I don't think he listens to podcasts either. I think he'd have to fax us as well.
I guess so. We'll send it.
Yeah.
No relation to Tom Cochran, Chad Cochran.
No, none. Okay, you got any other facts on this song or on Phil Collins that we need to get into?
Just one other thing. Not crazy about the video. If you've seen the video, it's the one where it's all up on his face.
It
changes color.
Doors. And
opening doors.
Yeah.
My least favorite thing about the video is the drum hit. I think it would have been so neat for them to hit his face on time with the drum hits, but it's not on time with the hits, even in the video. So
true.
Sorry, Phil. I think you missed the mark on the video.
But this video did benefit from a lot of early play on MTV. MTV had just launched when this came out, and so it got a lot of rotation early on MTV. But yeah, I've never thought it was a great video. It's, you know, just kind of is what it is. I mean, it's a little bit spooky or, you know, whatever. It kind of feels like a dream.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like a little bit.
It changes to the Technicolor with the thing. So yeah, I can see her dream thing.
Yeah. So.
Well, that's what I got.
Man, this is it. Just you're going to want to go listen to this song. Why don't we take you out with the drum break and a little bit of the groove from the end. And I want this groove, like, whenever I need to walk into a room confidently, you know what I mean? And just be able to, like, you know, yeah.
This is your own the room.
Yes, own the room. You walk into this with some walk into a room with this and some headphones, you've got it. You can. There's nothing you can't do.
Doors open, doves fly, and then
slow motion behind you.
Robin in a white suit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. That's what you're going to hear next time you see me, you know, come up into the room wherever you are. Just imagine me that way. That's all we got for this week on the Great Song Podcast. Wherever you are, however you're listening, thank you so much. We sincerely appreciate it. Until next time, I'm Rob.
I am JP.
Go listen to some music.